Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by the only person left on Milkation Island, Danielle Caroli. How's it going?
Oh, wait, I don't know if I can hear you. The palm trees blowing in the winds, the margarita in my hand. This is beautiful, and the signal's a little crappy here on the beach, but I'll make it work for the podcast today.
Yep. Does it feel that way now that like a lot of your friends are starting kidding season?
Oh, yes. I am still enjoying it. I have found so many memes to send to people as they start complaining or start talking about their kids, tropical sunsets, beaches.
Yeah, totally nice.
It's beautiful. I really am liking this late kidding this year.
Next year, Danielle's just going to be like, oh, herd dispersal, permanent location.
Exactly. Or I think I'm just going to let all my does nurse this year. And we'll see what happens. I feel like that would be more work than anything, actually.
Oh, yeah. But trying to keep those udders even, for sure.
Exactly.
Well, we started kidding season, as our listeners know, by seeing that post on our Facebook page. We had twin does born last Sunday. And by the time the listeners are listening to this episode, we'll have had another group of kids hit the ground. So we're off and running.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what a great way to start.
Yeah, twin does is really nice, especially since it's Jem's retirement year. So after she's all milked out this season, she'll be retired and enjoying the green pastures for a while, unless she really just drives me nuts when she comes into heat. Then maybe she'll get it for another time, who knows. I gotta say, and I know like all of our goat breeder friends are like, what's the big deal, but I'm super proud of my wife Tierney for the hard work she put in for this kidding. I mean, Jem started out super slow, not wanting to do anything. The night before she was due to be, we induced her. So the night before she was due to kid, she was just miserable, just standing, doing the head in the corner, just kind of like blah. And she just wouldn't get going. She just, we put her in the kidding pen that we set up for her, and she just kind of was there. So she finally started pushing and got a bubble. We're like, oh, it's time. And all of a sudden the bubble's gone.
So oh, no.
You're like, it's like, yes, it's happening. And then it's like, where's the bubble? Where'd it go? Like,
where's the baby? Should be here.
Yeah. She just sucked it back in and was like, nope. So then, finally, probably about 5 minutes later, I was like, all right, Tierney, I don't like this. Like, you're going to have to reach in because her arms and hands are way smaller than mine. So she found legs, and we talked through it, and I was like, "What way are they positioned?" And she motioned that they were positioned up to me by, with her hands just, up to the air. And I was like, "Ooh," I'm like, "Those are back legs." So I'm like, "You got to pull." So she pulled and got the baby out, nice long doe. And then, then Jem decided that the next kid was just going to come out head first and head first only. So Tierney had to reposition that one. And Tierney didn't grow up farming, so this isn't like an old hat for her. I mean, these are obviously the mildest of dystocia, right? When you think of it in the long term. So just super proud of her. She's like, yeah, I've been doing my research. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I love how into it Tierney's been lately. you know, I know I have friends in the past that were like, oh, well, it seems like it's just your show. No, it's really both of our show now. Like, this is, she's got her Guernseys, I've got the Obers. Like, we're going.
Right. And great job, Tierney. And it's also one of those things where I think, knowing both of you in this goat endeavor, you both have your own interests in it. So some things that you may find very fascinating aren't necessarily where she finds fascination. And so I think it's a nice balance of strengths and interests of who is looking into what and who is doing what. And I think it works well.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely balance each other out really well. So I'm very lucky. But yeah, so that's our week, and we'll continue with kidding and kidding and kidding, and maybe a trip out west somewhere for myself in the near future. Just putting a little bit, you know, a little breadcrumb down on the trail.
An Easter egg, as the Swifties like to call it.
Yes, yes, an Easter egg. Yeah, so how was your week?
It's going well. I'm dealing with a interesting kind of situation feed-wise that I'm trying to play with as easily as I can. So while my does are resting and just baking babies, they really only get hay, and I very much just use first cut hay through this time period, so that this way we're not using the second cut or third cut. We have an outlet for that first cut that comes from the field that we need to use anyway. And so I typically only feed first cut, and we've been using the same field for our hay for years and years. And it's a alfalfa grass mix, which, because it's been so many years since it was kind of created, it's going a little bit more grass, and my does are just not doing as well on it as they have in the past. And so I'm just trying to figure out where I go from here. If I start adding grain to feed the whole herd, which I really don't want to do, I'm hesitant to go in and grab some of my second cut or third cut, because I just want to make sure I really have it for when they're lactating. So just trying to figure out how to get them back in a little, they're just a little too skinny for me right now. And they all look fine as far as parasites. I'm probably going to pull a sample or two to do a fecal, but it's a whole herd issue. And normally when it becomes a whole herd issue, at least for me, it's not necessarily fecal loads, because I do have does that are, you know, more easily affected by fecal, you know, by parasites, excuse me. And so I think it's probably more that they're just not getting as much calories or energy as they typically get. Plus, because I am on a milkation, this is probably the longest they've gone on first cut for a few years. So I'm trying to just balance it out. There also is the possibility, and this is kind of where, you know, we're always learning and the weird things just keep coming for us goat breeders, but there is a possibility that we're feeding the hay from our field has too much of a trace mineral in it, and it's reacting negatively and causing our does to kind of be a little thriftier than normal. And part of the balance that kind of gets thrown out of whack is with this trace mineral. And I don't remember what the trace mineral is exactly, but through a little bit of research and talking with somebody else who is experiencing a problem, it just kind of is like, oh, maybe light bulb, this is what we're dealing with right now. And so anyway, this trace mineral reacts with copper, and you need to have a certain ratio of copper to this particular trace mineral. And so there's a very high potential that my does have a lot of this trace mineral in their systems right now. So I'm going to give them a little bit of copper through copper boluses and see if that helps as well, to just kind of even everything out and get them back. But in the meantime, they're probably going to get some kind of supplement, whether I break into my second or third cut hay and sprinkle that in, do a half and half, just try and figure out the balance to get them just looking a little bit more plumper than where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. We tend to do first cut. I really try not to do first cut, but this year we did first cut for 2 months until I could get my hands on some good second cut. And then switched over to the second cutting, and that's when, you know, those started to look a little bit better. I mean, mine just waste first cut so bad.
Well, like, and that's the other thing.
Yeah. So hopefully you get that figured out. And I'm assuming you probably had your hay tested and all that.
So, yeah. So long story short, we share hay with Caitlin Foley, who has been on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. And she was the one, and it's kind of an interesting story, and maybe we'll have her on the podcast to talk about it further. But she was the one who discovered that through this hay, which in this is typically the goat field hay, so that they get this hay, we get the hay, there was high concentrations of this trace mineral. It's found on shale. It's found in areas where there's alfalfa. It's kind of a yes, 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 check all the boxes. It's around where we live. And so it's something that she ended up testing everything to try and figure out a certain particular issue that she was having, and through that tested the hay, and they did find out that it was higher in concentration of this trace mineral. So,
interesting.
So it's, yeah, it's kind of a crazy adventure that they're going on, and but it has the benefit of me, because I was mentioning to her, like, ugh, these girls, they're just not doing what I want them to do. And she's like, well, so let me fill you in. And so ordered copper boluses. I'm going to try and just give the herd some. I haven't done that in a few years because there's usually enough in my minerals, but figure we'll try it. We'll add some feed and see if we can get them through this.
I have to copper bolus mine twice a year. It seems it's just all of a sudden their black starts turning a slight rust, and you're like, all right, time to copper, everybody, let's go.
Exactly.
So I suppose we should move on to some ADCA news for the week, huh?
Yeah, there's just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah, that's putting it lightly. We are going to touch on this new postal ballot out that is the changes to the linear appraisal program and SOP. So yeah, there's a new postal ballot out that's causing concerns to some of the membership, and I'm going to read that postal ballot and leave our thoughts out of it for now. So this is an actual text portion of the postal ballot that is causing some concern. So I'm just going to get right into it. So A, stature, which is the area that everybody's concerned. Actual measurement of all animals will be discontinued. Animals will be screened for conformance to breed standard using the ADGA-approved measuring device, similar to show ring procedure for Nigerian dwarf. Overheight animals will be assigned MC82 code. It applies only to Nigerian dwarfs. Standard breed animals not meeting minimum height at age 4 will be assigned miscellaneous code 83. Those younger than 4 will be assigned informational code MC83 circled on the sheet, 983 on the report. As standard breed animals under height at age 4 or older have a moderate defect, animals coded 83 may be scored excellent in general appearance. Committee voted 14 yes, 2 no. Current wording, SOP Section 5.1, physical measurements, stature and rump width will be measured by the appraiser using ADGA Linear Appraisal Committee approved devices, see Appendix C, which belong to appraiser. The appraiser must be consistent in measuring method. In the case of failure of the approved devices, other devices may be used in an emergency, proposed wording SOP Section 5.1. physical measurements. Stature will be evaluated and rump width will be measured by the appraiser using ADGA Linear Appraisal Committee approved devices against the Appendix E, which belong to the appraiser. The appraiser must be consistent in measuring method in the case cause of fail. I feel like it's saying the same thing twice, but whatever. In the case of failure of the approved devices, other devices may be used in emergency. Current wording SOP 11.3E, if overheight animals or overheight for a miniature breed, the general appearance score should reflect that score and the appropriate miscellaneous code used. Proposed wording SOP 11.3E, if overheight for the miniature breed, the general appearance category and final score should reflect that miscellaneous code 82 assigned. Reference SOP 10.5E and SOP 10.6B. Current wording SOP 11.3F, mature 4 years of age and older animals of any breed under minimum breed standard for height and miniature breed does that are over maximum height for the breed standards that are otherwise exceptional in type could be excellent overall but cannot be excellent in the general appearance category. References code 82 and 83 in the instances proposed wording SOP 11.3F, mature four years of age and older animals of any breed under minimum breed standard for height that are otherwise exceptional in type could be excellent overall and in the general appearance category. Reference code MC83, there's a pro, measuring stature is time consuming, is an employee safety risk, has resulted in many complaints of inconsistency by herd owners, and is not completely reflective of sire influence, but may be highly impacted by management. Stature was removed from the general appearance section of the scorecard. The BOD voted 30-0 to de-emphasize the significance of height. High-scoring animals will have actual measurement recorded. Con. Some members want precise measurements and utilize that information in breeding programs. That is the big hot topic item right now with ADGA. So there is that word for word. And there is another postal ballot news portion of our show this week. And what is that, Danielle?
So there's also a second postal ballot currently out, which will extend the stamp duplicates through September 30th for all animals. I believe the directors have until the 29th to vote. And so this way, the postal ballot will hopefully become active prior to the expiration of the current postal ballot, which is for March 31st, allowing all stamp duplicates to extend and be valid. There is a link to see all the current postal ballots and past postal ballots of 2022 on the ADGA site, and including the changes to the linear appraisal postal ballot, because there are many more aspects of that postal ballot as well out mm-hmm. there. And yep. So what we're going to do is we're going to post a link on our resource section of our website. So if listeners want to read the different postal ballots, see what the directors have been doing, what they are voting on, what's kind of the current situation, it'll be up there for an easy access point for our listeners.
Awesome idea. I like it. All right, and I guess I'll lighten it up a little bit with something that I saw on the Washington Post this week, and obviously saw it in some of the district pages. This week there was an article in the Washington Post titled, "Why Do We Drink Milk from Cows and Not Goats or Other Mammals?" And that title alone, like, you know what kind of article it is, right? It's pretty uninformed and lackluster, and probably the author most likely spent 15 minutes writing that, right? He had a phone conversation with a supposed professor, and he took that to heart. But I've reached out to the author to educate and have a conversation with him with no response. I may have made a ringside Twitter just so I could reach out to him.
nice.
The article was full of half-truths and misinformation, and the article just kind of furthered my, I guess, sadness for the disconnect non-farming people have with their food and where it comes from. I mean, shoot, a lot of cheeses have goat milk in it, and people drink and buy milk, goat milk all the time, baby formula, all that stuff. I mean, the list goes on, and it's a growing industry, and I would dare say probably one of the fastest growing portions percentage wise in the dairy industry. So it's kind of sad to see that, right? Like, it was just like, ah, like this could have been, yeah. Like, you could tell it was meant to be like a feel good story of, oh, this is why we drink cow milk and no, almond milk is not really milk. And it's like, great. Yeah. But you're like, one portion, they're like, oh yeah, goats are temperamental, and who would want to milk
it? You like, can't milk them. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, not how it works. That's not how any of it works. No, this reminds me of a time, and this is why I always say, if you have a question about farming or have a question where your food comes from, ask a farmer. Because, and I'm sure all of our listeners are like, yeah, well, duh, that's what we say too. But the disconnect there is so extreme, especially in very urban areas. I mean, this article reminds me, there was, I believe it was BuzzFeed, did a segment where they were able to purchase bull semen online, which to all of, you know, people who are, you know, have been raising goats for a while or who have been in the agricultural livestock industry go, oh yeah, duh. Like, but they were so amazed that they could just order it, and they had some silly experiment or something that they were trying to do with this frozen straw of semen. But then afterwards, I think they had a few extra straws left over, and they freaked out because they could not figure out what they were supposed to do with these straws, you know, 3 or 4 straws of semen, and were trying to, you know, did a Google search, did all this, couldn't figure out what to do. And the easiest thing they could have done was call up a local farm and say, hey, what do I do with this? And figure it out. But there's just such a disconnect there. So we all just have to remember to be agricultural advocates and make sure that when things like this pop up, we remember to use it as an educational moment, because people think their food just comes from the store. They don't realize that not only does it have to get to the store, but it has to be grown. It has to be produced. It has to be cared for, all of these things to get where it is. And it's not just, oh, well, why would I need to buy from a farm because the grocery store has it? That's not how it works.
Right. No, totally agree. It was just, yeah, a button item for us goat people when people are misrepresenting our beautiful, sweet animals, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So 2 more things on the list of news before we get to our interview here. Don't forget the town hall with our executive director and president are tomorrow as you're listening to this. We haven't received the info prior to recording, but we'll post an update on how to get on the Zoom call as soon as we can on our Facebook page. And one last bit of info here. I want to clarify the conversation we had about Guernsey's last week and them exhibiting at Nationals. You know, I think there was a little bit of confusion on our end as far as how the term exhibition was being used. It was on, you know, some of the other Guernsey people obviously misunderstood the term exhibition as used as well. And I was reached out by one of our directors and like, hey, exhibition is not showing, which if anybody shows at a county fair, you're an exhibitor and you're on an exhibition in the ring with other animals. So the term exhibition is basically like on display as far as ADGA goes for the national show. So Guernsey's having an exhibition is just them being in a pen and sitting there all week, right? So I honestly think that there was miscommunication as far as the term exhibition all the way to our president, because I saw the email that the president sent the Golden Guernsey Breeders of America club, and the term exhibition was being used, as we described last week, as like a show that just didn't count. You didn't get the ribbons and all that stuff. So yeah, to clarify, exhibition is just on display for the week. And hopefully they are able to be on display.
No, I agree.
Yeah. So I think people probably are like, hey, let's stop talking about this news, because I want to hear from Ben Tarr of Tarr Valley Farm Transportation, as we have that interview, and we are going to get to that right now.
With kidding season happening right now, it means that buying season is occurring as well. Breeders all over the country are buying their new junior herd sires or adding a special doe to their genetics. As such, people are looking to transport options to get those kids or new animals to the farm. While airlines are a popular option to ship kids, with prices going up and the options of airlines dwindling, ground transportation is an increasingly popular way to go, particularly when you're moving adult animals as well, or animals that don't quite fit into that dog crate. Our guest today is Ben of Tarr Valley Farm Transportation, and he and his wife Ellie run a successful transportation business bringing anything from dairy goats, meat goats, miniature cows, to miniature donkeys, and honestly everything in between across the country. Ben and his wife Ellie currently reside in central Illinois and have started their own family farm, Tarr Valley Farm, where they raise mini Highland cows, mini woolly donkeys, mini golden doodles, and Aussie doodles. When trying to move animals, they ran into the problem of not being able to find transport from reputable companies and didn't have the luxury of waiting months to get animals to their new farms or homes. So they decided to do something about it, and last summer they started their company, Tarr Valley Farm Transportation. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you.
Ben, how is your mini Highland adventure going? I didn't realize that you guys had mini Highlands as well, and I really hope my wife doesn't listen to this episode, because she's going to be like, we need to contact them.
It's going very well. Let's just put it that way.
They're a very popular breed these days.
They are. And they're a lot of fun to raise.
So for the listeners that may not know who you are, can we get a background with you and your family and your livestock and how your transportation business got started?
Sure. So basically, my wife and I, we both grew up here in central Illinois, both on farm, family farms. Her background is more grain farming, and her family raises commercial pigs. She grew up showing pigs in 4-H, along with she raises produce. So she did produce. I really don't know what you call it. Show in 4-H.
Yeah.
So we both met during that. I grew up showing cattle, pigs, sheep, goats. I kind of showed just about every species. I did livestock judging in college. And then her and I got married several years ago, and we decided to start raising miniature Highlands. We actually bought a piece of family ground in central Illinois from her family, So we started developing, about 4 years ago, we started developing our own little piece of heaven. And so we have our own little farm. We currently run about 20 miniature Highland cows. We have 4 miniature woolly donkeys. There, we have not had any offspring there yet, because that's still fairly new and we're waiting for them to become of age to breed.
Oh, okay.
And then we raise many golden doodles and many Aussie doodles. So during that process, we have used very few transporters, mainly because we've kind of gotten very comfortable with the few that we've used, and their reputation kind of precedes them, and they do a very good job. Problem is, everybody in the country caught on to that, and they were booked so far out that when we needed transport, we couldn't wait for several months to get them moved. So rather than venturing off to try to find the next reputable transporter, we decided to do it ourselves. And so last summer we started up Tar Valley Farm Transportation, and we had a lot of guidance from the previous company that we had used in the past. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of pointed us in the right direction as far as, you know, how to do it, how he ran it. And so we kind of took it from there, and now we're making it our own. So it's been very interesting, to say the least.
I'm sure there's a learning curve with it.
There has been. Yep. There has been. So, you know, I've told a lot of our customers, this is a fairly new thing for us as far as transportation goes, but this is not our first time with livestock. We both grew up with that. We know, you know, what it takes for care and daily care on the road. And so
that's,
here we are.
That's important. That's a really important aspect to it that maybe some, I'm not going to call out any transporters because I really don't know any that are terrible, but you know, maybe some other transporters don't really have a full grasp on is the actual care of the animals while they're in your possession. So the life of a transporter on the road makes for long days or weeks, depending on how long your trip is. What do your typical trips look like?
Sure. So each trip that we, our goal is to make each trip approximately 2 weeks long. And that gets us around country trip, basically. So basically in a day, I typically will wake up around 4 or 5 a.m. to start doing the chores. Depends on what I have on the trailer and how long it normally will take to do those chores will determine what time I actually get up and get moving. I like to try to be on the road by 6 a.m. And I'm typically on the road for about 11 hours is the top I can be on the road for. One thing we do abide by all DOT regulations. So I'm only allowed to drive a certain amount of hours throughout a day. And that kind of prohibits, you know, super long days, but
right.
It still does regulate the amount of time I can be actually driving on the road.
Well, that's a safety thing too, right? I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Nobody wants a fatigued driver with a full load. You know, it spells disaster in some cases.
Yeah. And, you know, being on the road for 2 weeks, it's nice to, get rest. get
rest. So, yeah, for sure.
You know.
So those that are trying to figure out cost of transport. Obviously, mileage from point A to point B differs based on starting and ending points for each animal, but what's an average price someone would expect? And I'm sure those prices are in the middle of being changed with the gas price increases that we're seeing these days.
Yeah. It's hard to give an average because every transport is completely different. And the reason I say that is because, you know, it is based off of how many miles. So we're from point A to point B. And then how many head they're wanting to transport. And then along with whatever special care is required for that transport, I do factor in all those things in my pricing. So it's really difficult to give an average because they are, there's no one the same, you know, there's not even remotely the same really.
Right.
You know, so I would say on average for one, if I could spit a number out for one, let's say bottle goat from, depending on how far away it is, roughly around $500.
Okay.
And that's a rough estimate. Because, like I said, the average is very difficult to provide considering every transport is different.
Yeah, for sure. And how are the gas price increases inhibiting your transportation?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult because one thing I, you know, being on the customer end of transport, it's hard to give my clients, my customers that buy livestock from me a price, and then 2 days later, 2 weeks later, it's changed. You know, the customers are dependent on, you know, they're trying to buy the livestock and then, you know, pay for transport. You know, so they're trying to budget that. So it's very difficult to try to raise or change pricing that I've given. However, I can't, you know, lose money in the process. And with the constant fluctuating operating costs, it's been very difficult to do that. It's not because it's, you know, fuel has a trickle effect. Not only does it immediately change my operating costs, but eventually it changes it drastically more because fuel is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to operating costs. It's not just fuel. There's so many other costs involved that most people don't understand. And, you know, just because fuel goes up doesn't mean that I'm only going to increase for fuel. I have a ton of other expenses that go up because of fuel.
No, that's understandable. I mean, we've seen it even in price of grain right now or shavings. All of those things have to just be trucked in, not even talking about processing costs or anything like that. But I mean, I know around here, our shavings primarily come from Canada. And so they have to fill those tractor trailers up with shavings and bring them down to New York. And there's costs involved there, plus the cost for production. So totally understandable, but that it's a move, you know, completely moving piece.
It's hard to find that happy medium. You know, because folks cannot afford, and I totally understand this, but they cannot afford to pay more or twice as much to transport an animal that, you know, they only bought for whatever that dollar amount is. Mm-hmm. And I get that. So I really try to take that into consideration when I'm working on my estimates. But on the same sense, I cannot go to the bank and borrow money to run my my business.
So, yeah, exactly.
Right. And this is a business. And so it's not, you know, a community service where you're driving animals around the country to just, you know, say, oh, this is great. This is a business.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Right. And so now we often hear about transportation scams and a lot of buyer bewares, especially in the social media world, when finding transportation for animals. What are the things you would say differentiate a good, reputable transporter from a bad one? And what should we as customers look for? And what are some of the red flags to just say, run?
You know, I have to think about that because I have not yet ran into a scammer.
Okay.
Now, on selling, raising and selling our livestock, we have ran into scammers left and right.
Oh yeah, especially with those Highlands, I'm sure.
Yes, it's all day long, constant. Even people wanting to buy stuff from us, or some of those have been scammers, and we've caught them. So I guess in my opinion, on this, considering I have not ran into a spam transporter yet. But I guess like with, if I were to apply what I know with the livestock, with what we're raising to that, vocabulary is way different with a scammer. I've noticed that with the scammers that, with our Highlands, their vocabulary is way off. It's way wrong. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know for sure what the scammers in the transport industry are doing, because I have not ran into them. But I would assume it's going to be a similar scenario. Their vocabulary is going to be all wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their prices are going to be cheap, dirt cheap.
Yeah.
And the catch is going to be, place a deposit right now, you know, for a small dollar amount. And so I guess my advice would be to pay attention to the lingo, pay attention to their vocabulary, and then pay attention to their pricing. And if it seems too good to be true, well, then it probably is, you know.
Yep.
Also customers could do their homework, research the particular transporter they're dealing with, and just kind of see. You know, it does not hurt to ask for references.
Right.
For example, you know, we're fairly new into the transport business at the moment, but I've, in the first couple of routes that I've made, I've made some pretty cool friends in the process. And they've been more than happy to provide honest and positive feedback. You know, again, one thing that kind of really, and I don't want to say sets us apart, because I don't think that we're any better than anybody else, but one thing that does kind of I try to strive for is, you know, we, how do I put this? We understand livestock in a sense that, it's hard for me to explain this. I apologize.
No, it's okay. So you understand the lingo with livestock. You understand the ins and outs of, if somebody asks about how you care for them, you know, particulars. I also think with scammers, and you'll probably notice this with, you know, the Highland scammers that you, I'm sure, just have to swim through. Their Facebook page tends to be fairly new, or a lot of, you know, there's not a ton of stuff on there when you look at them, right? It's all... Yeah. Very new stuff with maybe one or two pictures that they've stolen from somebody else. And yeah, I've noticed the grammar with them is just the worst. Yeah. So it's definitely easy to check in. And on those profiles and see if they're scams or not. Or like you said, yeah, references are a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And having that gold standard for transport, I think, is also important. I mean, I think you mentioned it earlier, but you have a DOT number, your USDA approved, correct? Or what is the terminology there?
Yeah, so we are fully licensed and fully insured. So we do have a DOT number and an MC number, which is required by law for this particular type of industry. Now, there's gray areas from state to state. My state requires all that. So just because somebody may not have it doesn't mean that they're running illegally. It just all depends on what their state requires, and they're all different. But as far as for Illinois, and again, I don't know much about the other states, but for Illinois, we are required to have a DOT and an MC number, along with the proper insurance to ensure the load, basically ensure the business. So that's what we have. Another thing I kind of just thought of is, I'm going to probably make a lot of other transporters angry, but a phone call, ask for a phone call, see if you can talk to the person. That's one thing I've been trying to do is when people are leery about us because we are new a lot of customers are new to finding transport. So they don't know. I always offer my phone number and ask them to call me and we can have a conversation and discuss things. That's one thing that I always wanted to do was talk to somebody because a lot of things can get missed or misunderstood via text or message.
Oh yeah.
So, then, speaking to somebody kind of puts a warm feeling to the customer. So they get a clearer understanding of what's going on.
Oh, I agree. And also with a phone call, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I have customers messaging me, and it's a conversation that I could have easily on the phone in 5 minutes. I'd rather talk on the phone than sit on Messenger for an hour and a half trying to explain to this person what's going on and, what they want to know.
Yes. So,
yeah. Yes. I think as if I were a fellow transporter, I'd be like, yeah, man, I don't want to sit on Messenger and text all day. So, yeah, phone calls are great.
Yeah. And There are several people who just prefer text, and that's fine. And that's if that's how they are comfortable, that's fine. But me personally, I like to have a discussion.
Yeah, same.
No,
same. Can you walk us through your setup of your truck and trailer? Your rig. What that looks like.
Yeah, so basically, my truck is just I have a 3500 dually, a GMC 3500 dually. It's four door, nothing spectacular. It's a fairly newer vehicle. That's one thing I wanted to make sure as I had reliable transportation while I'm on the road. So I actually made the investment. Very expensive investment right now.
Oh, yes, no. It is. Oh yeah.
But I did. I leaped, took the leap of faith and bought one. Our trailer is it's basically got 10 individual pins in the trailer, along with a camper and a tack room. So from front to back, I have a living quarters, which kind of accommodates me while I'm on the road. And then I have a tack room where I store all the feed and, you know, halters and feed pans, stuff like that. Tools, basically. The back part where the pins are, there's, like I said, there's 10 individual pins that are about 4x4. I can, each pin is, has, its own watering system. Now I don't provoke, like they don't have water 100% of the time, because I've found that the livestock as a nervous tick, they like to play in the water and they'll just flood the trailer. So,
oh God.
Because I used to have, they used to have, like automatic waterers, so they can get it at their leisure. But because of that, they would play in it and basically flood the trailer out and, just soak the pins.
Yeah. No fun.
No, not at all. So, you know, it's set up pretty slick. I do have an onboard watering tank, and each pin has its own, basically water hose. And, I also have hay bags in each pin as well. And so while I'm on the road, you know, they can be munching on hay, but that's ultimately depends on the feeding regimen that whatever animal is there is on. You know, some folks don't want them to have hay all day. They just want them to have it in the morning and have it at night. So whatever instructions I'm given is what I apply. Now, back to the trailer, on the roof of the trailer, I have a storage rack where I keep all my shavings, and then the generator's up there as well to run run all the electric. My trailer does have heat and air in the livestock portion of it, so I do have the ability to cool it down or heat it up if need be.
Okay.
So try not to, you know, it's a good capability to have, but also extreme different in climate. Like, so if I keep it really cold in there, that's not good on the livestock, you know?
Right.
So you just got to kind of find that happy medium there.
So. Yeah. To the point where you're not sweating to death when you're trying to sleep and August heat.
Yeah. And you don't want that for the livestock either. You
know, right.
You don't want them to be super cold because that heat shock will, you know, can hurt. So
yep.
You just got to find that happy medium for them if need be. I have not yet had to actually use the heat or the AC for the livestock area. But it's there if I need it. So
cool.
It sounds like they are pampered prince and princesses on this transport with just the standard of care that is given to them when they're on the road with you. How do you accommodate each individual animal or groups of animals kind of continuing on that topic train?
So, you know, like I said, each animal gets its own pen. And if, you know, I'm picking up from the same farms and they're sending me multiple, I can fit multiple into each pen. I do not put animals from the same or from different farms in the same pen. I will not do that. There's just a multiple things that could go wrong with that. In the goat industry, and I have a little bit of background with pigs, biosecurity is extremely important. So I do not, will not put an animal with another animal from a different farm. And again, biosecurity is one reason. Another reason is I don't want them fighting. And, you know as well as I do from different breeders, you introduce a different animal into a pen, they may or may not fight, but that is not one, that is not a risk that I'm willing to take while I'm on the road. So I refuse to do that. So I do strategize and plan, accordingly. So, whatever I'm picking up on the road will have its own pen unless specified by the breeder or the buyer that they can be together. And as long as they're from the same farm, as far as accommodations go for each pen, each animal, I do stop several times throughout the day to water everything. I typically can go, if I start at 6 a.m., I can typically go till about noon on a tank of fuel. But in between that time, I will have stopped at least twice to water livestock, on the trailer. And then from noon till about, sometime in the evening, I can go on another tank of fuel. But again, I will stop at least twice in the afternoon to water everything. It's crucial and imperative that they're hydrated, especially during long trips. You can't make them all drink every time, but I at least offer it. It's their choice. But if I don't offer it, then they don't have a choice,
Right.
I offer it at least. And typically they all drink, while, when they get thirsty, they'll eventually drink. So other accommodations, basically feeding, it all depends on, what they're on. I basically do whatever's required, whatever that animal is used to while they were at home is what I try to do on the road. Transporting is stressful enough. And the last thing you want to do is change anything more. You kind of want to keep them on the same, schedule. So, whatever the breeder has been doing, I try to do it while I'm on the road as well.
Okay.
As far as other accommodations go, I do clean pens often. So another part of important transport is, clean, dry pens, that's across the board. So I try to clean as often as I can, wherever I can, and provide dry bedding. It's very important to keep them dry, and comfortable. So I do clean as much as possible throughout the trip, which can be difficult sometimes because you across the country, it's kind of hard to just, you can't just pull over to the side of the road and clean out the trailer. So it can be difficult at some point, but I do make it happen. So.
Okay. So when we see trips advertised online, it seems like it's kind of a complicated puzzle with, a lot of moving pieces and many pieces at that. How are you putting together your different routes?
Yes, it is very difficult to put the pieces together. When I start looking at a route, I try to accommodate people who have reached out to me and are waiting for transport at a later date. So basically, one of two directions I go. I either go west first to pick up, and then I will deliver it back east, or I will go east first and pick up and deliver back west, and obviously drop off and pick up along the way. So, for example, my first route of the year is going to be here in April. Well, the end of March, first April, and I'm actually going to go east first to pick up and deliver back west. So then in May, I will go the opposite direction, so I can try to accommodate both both areas going each direction. So it is pretty complicating. To determine where and how I need to go. So basically, I just use Google Maps, and I just start. I have a starting point and an ending point, and I just try to, you know, my initial post for the initial route, it'll just be a big circle. And then as I start booking and filling up the trailer, that circle will turn into a 3-year-old coloring book. So I try to keep it streamlined because, you know, especially now with the way operating costs are going, it is way cheaper on everybody and way more efficient on everybody if I can just stay smooth sailing and not deviate a lot. So, and that's what I keep telling customers is if I can be more efficient, I can save you money. You know, so if I can stay on the road and not go off the beaten path very far, it'll save money for everybody. So
were you doing like farm pickups before, where now you might be doing you know, stops at like exit off the interstate?
No, I cannot go to farms. My trailer is 44 feet long. So I cannot go into farms, and I have tried and it has not been successful. And, I'd love to accommodate that. I really, really would, because it would make my customers' lives a heck of a lot easier. But with the length of my trailer, I can't do it. I have been burned, not intentionally, but I have been burned by trying to go to farms, and it's just too risky. You know, because it can be one mistake as far as you know, not knowing where I'm at,
right?
Not knowing the terrain could set me back, you know, five hours just because of the terrain. So, with my trailer being so long and it is pretty low to the ground, I don't have a lot of clearance. So, you know, I've had folks tell me, "Oh, I can get a semi in and out of my driveway." And that's fine, except two things. One, I am a lot lower to the ground, so if I have to go over a railroad track or anything like that, I can't do it unless it's an even railroad track. But 90% of the time,
do those exist?
yeah, 90% of the time they're not an even, you know, even with the pavement, it's a big hill, you know, and so that's one. And two, just because a semi can go in and out of a driveway doesn't mean I can. A semi is a little bit longer than my rig, but they can turn a heck of a lot different than my truck and trailer does. The turning radiuses are completely different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, put it in a nutshell, I don't do it.
Okay.
So I was actually pretty delayed about 5 hours on one of my routes because I did attempt to go to the farm, and I won't do it again. But I do try to, again, accommodate the customer and meet them as close as I possibly can. You know, we'll try to meet at like a truck stop or something like that. You know, I've heard of some people meeting at rest areas, but I think like rest areas are too difficult because, for the customer anyhow, because they got to get on the interstate on the side of the rest area of whatever has been chosen. And I think that's just too complicated for the customer. So I try to meet at larger truck stops or major box stores, such as like Walmart parking lots, Menards parking lots, Home Depot, Lowe's. Those parking lots are very, very big and easy for both parties to get in and out of, and safer, you know. So
yeah, plus you get to see the crazy people of Walmart.
Yeah, that's always a plus. Yeah.
And then all those crazy people of Walmart think you're the crazy person of Walmart as you're taking that little goat and putting it on somebody else's trailer, pulling it out. Some of these people probably have never even seen a goat in their life or a cow.
That is the truth. That is the truth.
So what are some things that you think customers don't grasp when dealing with transport? And is there anything you wish that people knew?
Yeah. You know, mainly the price.
Yeah.
People don't understand the actual cost involved in transporting. And I say people, some people don't, you know, I understand that there's a general idea out there, but you know, oftentimes I get, well, gee, I know fuel went up, but come on. Okay. Well, no. Fuel is not the only thing that went up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
and, seriously.
And also, you know, with specific instructions, as far as specific feeding instructions, you know, I'm not just doing this out of the kindness of my heart. You know, this is a business. We are trying to run a business, and we're trying to help people get their livestock from point A to point B as safely and securely as possible, okay, and stress-free as possible. And that comes with a lot. That comes at a price. And, you know, it's not just my cost, it's my time as well. So if I'm having to do special care, special needs such as bottle feeding, milking, you know, that's all labor. That's time.
Right.
You know, that's not just drive, that's not just window time. That's getting out. That's, you know, in the morning, 2 hours prior to leaving. So at 4 a.m., that's getting up, milking or bottle feeding or just feeding all the livestock, cleaning pens, getting on the road by 6, driving till 6 p.m., and then doing that all over again. You know, so the price of when I provide an estimate, it's not fuel. I mean, that's what people think of. Oh, well, fuel's not that expensive. Well, no, you're right. It's not, I guess. But everything
or else. Or it wasn't.
Everything else. Yeah, exactly. From getting that animal from point A to point B at the sum of, you know, 3,000 miles. Because that's a lot of it. A lot of the clients are, these animals are going, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 miles away. There's a lot involved in that, and that's the only thing I wish people would see is it's not just fuel. You know, I could print off my entire cost sheet and give it to you. And you guys, and most people would be like, holy crap, but that's not the case. It's not just my cost. It's also labor too,
Yeah.
So again, I try to be fair with everybody, and, the part that I am doing out of the kindness of my heart is trying everything that I can possibly do to make sure that the animals are safe and stress-free. That's what I'm doing out of the kindness of my heart. The rest of it costs,
Well, so what are some ways that these sellers or buyer, or I guess sellers, could do to minimize that stress from shipping across country?
So this, to minimize the stress, basically, whatever the animals are used to at home is what they need to have on the road. Mm-hmm. Again, any type of transporting, whether you're moving them from your house to another pasture, down the road, it's stressful. The animals don't like that stuff. That's out of their comfort zone. And so anytime you do anything like that, it's stressful, let alone going across the country. So, it's important to keep them on the same diet as what they were used to. It's very important to keep them on the same diet. And because, even at home in the comfort of their own home, you change an animal's diet, you guys know. There are consequences to that. Some good, some bad, but anytime I've ever changed a feed regimen on an animal at home, it's always been a negative impact, and such as diarrhea or something like that, or just not eating, because they're so used to something different and they just don't eat it.
Right.
So it's important to keep the animals on the same diet. So whatever they're eating at home is what needs to be sent for the amount of days that they're going to be on the road. And so that is one thing I do try to do, is provide both the seller and the buyer how many days the animal is going to be on the road. And I try to stick by that. Now, there are unforeseen circumstances that I, knock on wood, have not quite ran into yet, but I'm sure they're coming down the road.
Right.
But, just delays. And so that's where, you give a little bit more, provide a little bit more. So my rule of thumb is however many days I tell you they're going to be on the road plus two. That's kind of how much feed or whatever they're getting to send with them.
Makes sense.
Also make sure that, they can consult with their veterinarian, with their vets, to see what pre-transport shots they can get to whether it be a vitamin B booster or something along those lines. They can do that, that would certainly help. So
I can only imagine your tack room when you start your trip is probably this crazy supply of, I want to say, organized chaos with 10, if your truck is, or your trailer is full with 10 different animals, 10 different types of feed, 10 different types of hay. Is that how it works? Or do you try and kind of...
Yep, pretty much. when I always start the trip, the tack room is nice and clean. And by the end of it, I don't even want to walk in there. Or I can't even walk in there.
Sounds like my tack room when the show season.
Yeah. I know there certain at a certain point in the trip, in order for me to do the chores, I have to basically get all the feed out, unload it all, and then feed, and then pack it all back up. So it's a lot. But again, it's important. It's important that the animals stay on the same diet.
Right.
So I don't care what it takes. You know, that's not important. What's important is I stay on the same diet.
Okay. And when you're grabbing all these animals, obviously kidding season has begun for meat and dairy goat owners. What's like, how young are you like comfortable with transporting kids and have you ever had to have like a bottle baby ride shotgun with you or?
I have not. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I said or anything like that. Yeah.
I have not had a bottle baby ride shotgun with me yet. I'm sure the day is coming. You know, there's going to be one circumstance where it might happen. But as of right now, I have not. As far as age goes, you know, I don't know that happy age. The only thing that I ask or that I would feel is important is whatever age that is, whatever age the seller deems okay to send the goat, whether it's a bottle baby or what, I don't know, but they need to make sure that they are fully transitioned to a bottle and have been transitioned to that bottle for quite some time.
Yes.
You know, we, in our particular industry, with selling many Highlands, you know, it can be transitioning a baby calf to a bottle is very, very stressful. That's probably the most stressful thing that a calf can go through. Right, you know, probably more stressful than just weaning. And I'm assuming it's the same thing for a goat, kids. So it would be, to me, extremely important that the kids have been transitioned to the bottle and have been for at least a couple weeks, I would think. Again, I'm not proficient with goats. I have raised goats in the past, more so meat goats. So I've not really had the experience of pulling kids off and putting them on bottles.
Right.
Most of the goats that I've raised have weaned their kids off. So now I have had to put goats on bottles before. I have had that. But as far as, you know, the normal routine, I have not. So again, I think it's very important that the kids stay or are fully transitioned to a bottle and 100% comfortable before they go on a trip. And if they're not, I need to know about it, you know. At least tell me about it so I know that, hey, this one needs to be especially looked after and cared for, you know. So because they will require a different amount of interaction, I guess you could say.
No, that totally makes sense. I think to my experience with my dairy goat kids, and we start all of our kids on bottles, but then we switch them to a large milk feeder, and when they get picked up and sold, even if they're just going a few minutes down the road or they're in, you know, a few hours, there always seems to be that little bit of stress of introducing an animal to a new situation and putting them back on the bottle from that feeder that they're used to. So, and that's just a simple trip that's not cross country, so it's totally understandable to try and create an environment where in this stressful situation, the most things are the same as possible as this animal is moving, and putting them back on a bottle if they weren't on a bottle before, if they had graduated to a lamb bar or whatever, is definitely an important thing that probably goes a lot farther than a lot of people realize.
Yeah. Well, and on that same sense, you know, Part of what I need to be doing is I need to be focusing on getting everything across the country as quick as possible, so they're on the trailer at the least amount of time possible. That's the most that, you know, that's very important. And that's what I need to be focusing on. I don't need to be focusing on re-breaking a baby kid or a calf to a bottle. That, you know, that should be done prior to transport, not during transport. And that can be, that could become a major setback for the goat, you know, for the kid. And we just don't want that. You know what I mean? That's not good. So it's important to make sure that they are, you know, fully transitioned to a bottle. Cause I don't have the luxury of hanging a lamb bar on my pins. You know, I don't have that capability. Right. Those lamb bars are pretty long, aren't they? I mean,
some of them are, some of them are circular, kind of like the 5 gallon pail bucket size, but it really depends on everybody's setup and what they use. So
yeah,
it's you know, completely different setups for each operation. And so to try and accommodate that gets very complicated. I could only imagine very quickly. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that's a handy tip. What other tips would you give to anybody that is either using transport through a transporter or even transporting animals themselves across states to a different farm?
Okay. One thing we haven't really mentioned is the CVIs. Mm-hmm. You know, with going from state to state, especially in my situation where I'm going through almost however many states I go through, it's important to have the proper CVIs. If I were to get pulled over without them, and depending on the kind of mood that the officer is in, they could take my load if I don't have the proper CVIs. Right. I've heard of that happening. I've heard of those types of things happen. I have not had it happen, and I sure as heck hope I don't get into that position. But as long as I have the proper paperwork in order, I'm good. But I have heard of horror stories where a transporter has been without any of that and they get their legs confiscated. So I do require all proper CVIs for transport on anything. I don't, because that ounce of prevention is worth the 3,000 pounds of cure right there in my book. So I don't want to risk it.
No, I don't blame you whatsoever. I mean, geez. And that gets expensive for whoever has to fix that problem that they created, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but the added stress of the potential of having to call all your customers and say, hey, we hit a little bit of a snafu, and all of these animals are now in the county pound right now, but I'm working on getting them out. It just is not a call I'm sure you want to make.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. So, yeah. Try to avoid that like the plague.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I can tell you, I haven't used a ground transporter yet. I've done it. My first buck that I got was flown, and I mean, shoot, he was flying and was more than buying them, right? So next time we get something from far away, we're definitely gonna look at the ground transport route. You know, hopefully gas won't be $10 a gallon by then.
Oh gosh, I hope not. I really hope not.
it's scary. I mean, filling up my little 1500, you know, Chevy 1500, I can't imagine what. I don't even want to know. I'm gonna have nightmares tonight thinking about that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I just filled up yesterday, and that hurt.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can only.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Was there anything else that you think customers should know when considering ground transport before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I really don't know that I can think of anything. You guys pretty much asked a lot of important questions. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I see a lot of the time on social media is there needs to be a little bit more consideration for the driver's time. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of.
Well,
it's true though. I mean, I see a lot of these posts, especially buyer beware, that this transporter was 4 hours late, and it's like, okay, yeah, being late stinks, but that driver's also could have gone through an accident and had to sit in traffic for 2 hours. Yeah. You just don't know what's going to happen, and these things can and do happen. So I think a little bit of consideration goes a long way.
Yeah.
Right.
And that I'm really thankful that you guys brought that up. Because there has been several instances for me where I was behind schedule because of certain circumstances that are completely unavoidable. And I will never forget one of my first routes. I was supposed to be at a location at like 1 p.m. in the afternoon. And from where I was at, it was only a 45-minute hop. And it took me till 8 p.m. to get there because I was stuck on the freeway and not moving. And there was no way that I could get off. There was no way that I could get around because it was a freeway. It's six lanes wide. And it was just bumper to bumper traffic. Now, thankfully, the customers that I had understood the area very well. And they were completely supportive of me. And so I was very fortunate but I do know that I have heard, and quite frankly, I've been on that end where I'm like, good Lord, you guys said you were supposed to be here, at this time, and here it is 5 hours later. What the heck? I've been there. I've done that.
Right. But
now that I'm on this end of it, I get it. I totally understand that. But on the same token, yeah, here I am asking you to cut me slack on that. But on the same sense, as a transporter, the transporter has a responsibility and an obligation to let the customers know what's going on during that process. You can't just set the phone aside,
right,
and expect to be 4 hours late and not have the customer ask questions. Can't expect that. So keeping everybody informed and in the loop of what's going on is extremely important. Before we get on our route about a week prior, I will be able to confirm the day that I will be at every location and the time. And I always say give or take a couple hours. And I'm normally pretty much right on time with those things. But there's always that chance that I'm not going to be, and the customer will know. Another thing that I always try to do is the night before, I will text everybody who I'm supposed to meet the following day and say, hey, I'm on schedule or I'm not. So that way they can plan their next day and a little bit better. And then about 2 hours prior to my arrival time, I will send another text or a phone call, depending on where I'm at, what I'm doing, and say, hey, I'm about 2 hours out. So I try to give plenty of heads up for the customers so they can plan their day, because I have been in their shoes several times where I had no idea when so-and-so was going to show up and that's irritating. It's very irritating from a customer standpoint. I get it. So I try to take that into consideration with my business right now and provide as much information as I can, almost probably to a point where some of the customers are like, good Lord, leave me alone. I'll see you when I see you. I don't know that, but I would much rather them complain because I gave them too much information rather than not enough.
So, right. Okay. Now, Ben, where could we, or our listeners, find you on Facebook or any of the other social medias and your business?
Yeah. So we are on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Tar Valley Farm Transportation. We are on the Instagram as well at Tar Valley Farm Transportation. And then we also do have a website, and our website is www.tarvalleyfarm.com.
And then you have a trip coming up as well.
Yep. We are planning on, I'm actually working on this week here to, start narrowing down my exact days. So I'm hoping to provide all of our customers with, dates and times this week. But we should be starting up, March 30th is our first route. And again, we're going east first and, picking up and taking things west. So,
all right. Well, it's that time of year. So
yes,
good luck with those trips this year. I hope that everything goes well. And, yeah, thank you for being on the show. It's been just awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been an honor.
All right, everybody. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
This has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.